Welcome to They'll Be Fine.
We're your hosts, Kim Heckman
and Lisa Pagano.
You've probably heard it before. They're smart. They're gifted. They'll be fine. But what if that's not always true?
In this podcast, we'll explore the surprising struggles that many gifted students face that lead to underachievement, as well as discuss practical strategies to help these brilliant minds reach their full potential.
Because they deserve better than just being fine. Let's give them what they really need to thrive and succeed.
Welcome back to They'll Be Fine, the podcast where we dive into the most impactful practices in gifted education and beyond. In this episode, we're exploring an instructional approach that transforms classrooms into vibrant spaces for critical thinking, inquiry, and meaningful dialogue, the Paideia approach. We recently had the privilege of sitting down with two incredible school leaders in Charlotte, North Carolina, Kelly Dowdy and Jane Armbruster. They are implementing the Paideia framework at their schools with remarkable success. They shared valuable insights into how this philosophy fosters deep learning, student engagement, and a culture of intellectual curiosity. Whether you're an educator looking to refine your teaching strategies, or a school leader considering whole school implementation, this conversation is packed with wisdom and practical takeaways. So, get ready to rethink classroom discussions, challenge traditional instruction, and discover how the Paideia approach is shaping the next generation of thinkers. Let's dive in. We are thrilled to have both of you with us today. Kelly and Jane, will you share a little bit about your professional backgrounds with us?
I'm Kelly Dowdy. I am in my eighth year as a principal at Elam Park Elementary. And I have been in education for almost 25 years. Started as a classroom teacher, was a literacy facilitator before stepping into the role of AP and then principal. All in CMS.
I'm Jane Armbruster. I had the pleasure of working with Kelly for a few years as an AP. And then this is my seven-ish years as a principal. And I, like Kelly, have been in multiple roles in CMS as the classroom teacher, AIG teacher, facilitator, and then moved into the admin role. And this would be my 25th year here in CMS.
And you briefly mentioned that you were able to work together. What was that like?
It was just the best thing ever. It was like having the strongest partner who has the same values aligned and instructional goals, but complements your weaknesses with her strengths in the best way, so that we just made a complete package as a leadership team at a school.
Yeah, I think it's just so important that we both think outside the box. And it was really nice to have a partner that could push me to think outside of where I was used to. Kelly's such a strong instructional leader. And it was so nice to be asked the right questions that made me think about, what do I really think about that practice? So that was a fantastic experience.
For listeners who may not be familiar, can you briefly explain what the Paideia approach is and its core principles?
Well, I think to its core, it's about civic dialogue, engaging our teachers, understanding that dialogue comes from deep understanding of big ideas. And so it is a very structured way to get our kids to start thinking about those big ideas. And we start off with really a launch kind of question and engaging them to think outside the box and to come up with multiple ideas, and teaching our kids to listen to one another so that you can really digest what someone is saying. And then how do I internalize that to either rethink my own ideas or to confirm my thinking?
Beautifully stated, Jane.
And how were you introduced to Paideia?
I was introduced as a classroom teacher. I feel like at the time it was used primarily as a strategy for gifted instruction only. And so I feel like that's how it was brought to me. I remember implementing it in my classroom as a fourth grade teacher. And obviously with the whole class, not just the gifted students, but I had always heard rumors and had the opportunity to go visit Providence Spring, where Jane is now, as like the premier Padea school and really good seminar practices. But I didn't really get deep into the work as a whole school until I went to Beverly Woods, and then was able, through some mentorship opportunities with the previous principal at Providence Spring, bring that practice over to Beverly Woods.
I've heard of Padea teaching. I use it in my classroom. I've never heard of a Padea school-wide model. Where did this start? Did you start it? Tell me everything. Like, I can't even imagine having kindergarten all the way up on the same methodology, especially to add, we have to have this in the classroom for every student. It's no longer about gifted students getting to some kind of rigorous level of thinking. It's all students.
Yeah. And Jane, I think you should take that one, because it was the mentorship through your school and the previous principal that really opened my eyes to a whole school program and rolling it out K-5.
Well, interestingly, I mean, I have the same background as you, Kelly, that I think I was introduced to Padea with my gifted teacher that I had partnered with in fifth grade. And then I was so intrigued that I got my AIG licensure and took more courses, obviously, and learned a little bit more about the Socratic Padea seminar, and then just tried it and thought throughout, you know, even teaching in AIG role and then as a facilitator, even did it for my national boards. I feel like a lot of teachers are taking that on. When I transitioned here to Providence Spring, it was in the blood and in the foundation of what was part of the culture at PSC Padea. And so that, I think it obviously starts with the leadership, right? The previous principal, to me, was a very strong advocate for just the whole Padea process. And in that process was coaching teachers on how to have this civic dialogue and creative thinking process. They started with faculty seminars. And so as a whole staff, we would create the same experience that we would give to students, but on a much higher level, complex text. And then from there, it kind of led into, well, why don't we try out a school-wide seminar? And in that tapping in of school-wide seminars, you know, they started off with having one every quarter, and then, hey, let's try a couple a quarter. And then it kind of bled into where teachers then said, you know what? A seminar would really go well for the beginning of this unit, but it also would go well at the end of the unit. So I think that started to just kind of trickle that importance of the launch conversations and those ideas, and then the closure of those big ideas.
I was just going to add, you know, the beauty of a teacher is, especially a veteran teacher, and Jane and I both get to have a lot of those, they're so skilled at knowing the developmental need of the children that they teach primarily. So to have a skilled teacher who can look at a process that they participate in as an adult and say, okay, I can see the entry point for a kindergartner in this. They're going to be able to sit in a circle because we have a morning meeting and they know that practice. And they're going to be able to practice turn-taking without raising their hand. And just for them to be able to break it down to the most critical moves that are instructional moves, but might not be rooted in like a curriculum, but they can break down the skill work so that they can build up to students having conversations, I think is how you approach that school-wide model. It's just recognizing that not every seminar looks like an adult seminar and it doesn't look like a fifth grade seminar, but where on that spectrum of conversation are kids at their age? And then having, you know, skilled teachers who can see that opportunity.
I kind of want to hear the nitty gritty. I think a lot of elementary school teachers are kind of captains of their ship. And this model has the teacher stepping to the side. Like you said, you're not even raising hands when you're having the conversation. You're having the students, they're waiting for the appropriate time to add to conversation without dominating it. Everyone gets a turn. And I cannot even fathom what that looks like at the kindergarten level. So would you just kind of walk us through what that looks like?
Oh, gosh, that is the most fun. Let's just start small. I feel like in kindergarten, Sometimes our seminars only last 5 to 7 minutes at the beginning. You know, so I think we titled them as mini seminars because I think, like Kelly was saying, it's teaching and coaching of what does a conversation look like? What does the body look like? What should your mind be thinking? What, you know, we give them sentence starters, I agree with, and coaching kids to have that symbol so that not everyone speaks out, but like a some sort of symbol that would say that I agree with or I disagree with. So it's that whole conversational piece that I think as humans that we have to be coached and taught how to have a dialogue and to really listen to someone without making up our mind first. So I think it starts there.
What I would add to that is that as a leader, it also has to be, you have to create that safe atmosphere where teachers can try without fear of failure or judgment, to know that, because if students are driving the conversation, it's going to be funny and comical and messy and beautiful. All of this, like all of those pieces go together. And so really modeling that for teachers of like a faculty seminar and reflecting of what I would have done differently or better, and then really being vulnerable ourselves and leading on the early stages. I still do. Actually, I'm doing pre-work right now in a fifth grade classroom, staying in that work and making sure that I have assigned myself to a classroom and I'm still leading or co-leading or mapping. And so that I'm modeling that constant posture of a learner and a reflector for my staff. But I really feel like that safe practice has to be in place, because otherwise teachers they're not going to try because they're going to be afraid that it's not perfectly executed.
Conversations, we think they're natural, but like you said earlier, Jane, it needs to be taught. I mean, not just the students, but adults are not good at conversations. We think it's supposed to be this natural thing. And a lot of us do the talking well, but we don't do the asking questions and the connection and all of these things that you need to do to have a good, solid connection with somebody through language. The teachers might not be proficient in this. You know, you can teach fifth grade math, but to be a teacher of conversation, I'm curious. I bet teachers at your school improved on their conversations as well.
Yeah, you know, I think part of what we're talking about, the coaching and the teaching, it's another life skill that Padaya gives us an opportunity to do is goal setting. And, you know, Kelly was just saying, conversations get messy, right? And it's freeing in a way for a teacher to be able to make those instructional moves based on where the conversation is going. And those opportunities give teachers and the student to have a goal setting conversation. So actually, before even the seminar starts, we have a class goal and an individual goal. So the class goal, you know, you had mentioned, Kim, them not all talking over each other. And so it's very intentional that the class goal could be, we are going to listen and we're going to talk one at a time. How do we know someone's ready to talk? They may perk up a little bit. They may look at us. So it's those nuances of conversation and direct teaching of that. And then reflection after the seminar to say, did you notice that so-and-so spoke up and no one else talked? Hey, we practice one person talking at a time. So I think those are important life lessons.
I think it's magical that you have a whole school-wide systematic approach to teaching and learning. It's obviously a huge part of your culture. Can you talk a little bit more about the school-wide seminars and what you've learned through that process of having the whole school focus on one text and everyone's doing different seminars at their own level, kindergarten all the way through fifth grade?
So we have learned a lot since COVID. When PSC started their faculty seminar, it was very much on a very high level of text that adults, right? Big ideas for adults to have a conversation about. And so it was very high level. In fact, I want to say, looking at some of the previous texts that, the staff had, it blew my mind on the values and big ideas that they would be discussing. I mean, it could be financial literacy, you know, so it was something applicable to me as an adult. During COVID, we learned that our brains could only take so much new information because we were learning all the technology. And so we were, our PIDEA committee was very intentional about having a school-wide seminar that staff also could relate to in complex ways, but also layered it so the kid was able to understand. So one of the ones that I think I presented on at the PIDEA conference was Encanto's song Under Pressure. Wasn't that just the most perfect set of words, chorus line that teachers understood on one level, but students equally felt? And that common text, I think, brought us together so we could all have fun, lighten the mood, but also understand that your story and what you're going through is different from my story, but we can still connect on what it feels to be like under pressure. So as we've kind of grown from COVID and we're learning a little bit more about just the impacts of us not having that dialogue and face-to-face is challenging now, we're getting as a staff more complex text. And I really try to select faculty seminar based on some of our cultural environment, our feelings, and that pop up maybe from staff meetings or just what's going around the community and the world.
What we've learned is that we can all talk about, like, we can select a value or a big idea, which is kind of the core of a PIDEA seminar, is that we want to get kids talking or thinking about this big idea that's beyond the text. So the text is kind of the where we root ourselves in it, but that's not the end point. Is the goal isn't to be proficient on the text. The goal is to be thinking about this bigger idea, and that we can differentiate that text and accomplish that depending on the age of kids. So where our kindergartners or first graders might just focus on a page of a text or two pages, you know, we might shorten it so that they can and lift out like what might be the most prominent of the pages of a whole text. And then 2 through 5 might be able to focus on the whole text. So really kind of being flexible and drilling down to, well, if the goal is to talk about or think about the big idea, so what of this or what different text could we offer that gets us all having a similar conversation so that we're thinking and we're moving together as a community?
I'm thinking about the families you have where they're having conversations, I'm sure, at home, because they're all discussing the same main goal, but at different levels. That's fantastic.
Well, we also host parent seminars with our school-wide seminar so that the whole family now can talk about the text or a big idea together at the dinner table, which I think is phenomenal, right? Families connect when they are able to have those similar ideas and conversation starters. And so the parents go through that same process. I think Kelly and I both were doing that, Elon, that invited parents to come to their students' seminar. The most recent one that I went to in third grade just now, the parents were asking the other student questions, which was one of the first time I'd ever been in a parent seminar, that parents were asking each other and kids questions, and kids were responding. So the facilitator really was just there to listen, and the mapper was mapping all of these connections because the parents were asking questions and kids were responding. So it was just a phenomenal, that was just the best, last week. So it's a phenomenal just experience to watch.
And, you know, you have differentiation because you're doing this goal setting, which allows every child to kind of enter in at whatever level they are in the conversational skill building part of it. But also you've got this element of character building, which the perseverance you spoke about earlier, is the holistic child. You're really teaching all parts of a student.
I think the character building part of the PIDEA framework period is way above a school-wide discipline plan. We are teaching them to be good human beings, and that is far more the goal of a citizen, good stewards of the world, One of my favorite goals, and I know that our kids, our upper grades for sure use it, is to speak from uncertainty so that kids who may talk a lot or enjoy time, that teacher and that student can set up a goal of, let's set up your goal as speak from uncertainty. What question do you want to ask? Where do you feel in the text that you want to seek a little bit more understanding or are not quite sure about? So I love that goal.
That's always my personal goal. Seminar is to speak from uncertainty.
I'm always working on that one and not formulating my ideas too much, but just trying it. You know, just that creativity and that critical thinking of like, what if I just try it? What if I just put it out in the universe and then what happens? I was thinking, Jane, what you were saying about how this process teaches them to be good humans, how we're building that capacity. And so for me, I think the best representation of that really is the seminar circle. We're all sitting together on the carpet. Everyone has a place. Everyone has a place in the circle, including the teachers. Teachers don't sit in a chair if we're sitting on the floor. You know, teachers don't sit behind the circle. Teachers are part of that circle so that we're really building that. Everyone has a voice. Our goal is to share the airtime. Sometimes it happens more than others, but that we value what each person says and then how that makes us better or helps build our idea, because we can take all those pieces and add it to our own understanding.
I feel like we talk a lot in Padea framework about the whole seminar, which is a big part of that. But really, when we think about this Padea framework, it's understanding by design that there's some action that is required from, I guess, internalizing the big ideas. So I feel like that's where we are continuing to stretch ourselves. What is that coach project? What is that service that we can give to the community? What can little people do to give back to the community? Which, again, life lesson. How are we global citizens? How are we good stewards of what we have and the resources that we have?
And specifically for gifted students, my three kids went to a public school here in Chapel Hill, and they had Padea seminar for 6th, 7th, and 8th for their social studies. And I noticed by the time they got to high school, they became students that did not monopolize conversations. They waited until everybody else didn't have the answer before they spoke. I saw it in their comments from their teachers. And it was the first time as a teacher, I realized, oh, that's my goal as an AIG teacher. To have them choose when to speak, not just always acknowledge, I have the answer, and my hand is constantly raised, but instead to really pick, when am I going to contribute to this class discussion, and choose your one or two nuggets.
I know that I've heard from our middle school principals that when our kids go to their middle school programs, that they are able to, Kim, similarly to what you're saying, is to seek thinking of others, seek the learning of others. So they're asking somebody else the question, right? They don't have all the answers, but hey, what are you thinking about that? I think equally as important, they can advocate for themselves.
Sounds like there's just so many amazing benefits that come along with Padea. There's built-in SEL, there's community building, there's all these great structures. All students have access to think critically and creatively and at very high levels. It also seems like it's the perfect blend of input and output. Kids are reading, they're writing, they're speaking, they're listening. Everything is so integrated. What advice might you give to other principals or building leaders who are interested in implementing Padea in their schools?
I believe that Padea is a way of thinking. It's a way of life. I say to start small, but I think it definitely starts with faculty buy-in, right? And practicing maybe those mini seminars with faculty and then going through seminars together. And once you've gone through a few seminars together, really breaking down the art of how did we come up with those questions, the art of teaching, the nuances of conversations that we talked about. Because there definitely is art, right? I think as educators, when we're going through our teaching program, we know that there is a series of questions that you ask, you know, the thick and thin questions, or there's a series of questions that guide them to develop bigger ideas. Once teachers buy into, hey, that's not only for literacy. Oh, that's for math. That's for science. That's for, you know, it's cross-curricular. I don't have to put new things in my toolbox and toolkit. It's one philosophy, one way of teaching that is always going to withstand new curriculum, that will always withstand changing of leadership. It's how I believe teaching should look like, feel like, sound like in a classroom.
And Jane, I would add to that, if a school or a principal or even a teacher is wanting to get started, knowing why you're getting started and what your intended outcome is, that's what you want. You want to build a space where students are speaking to each other, but also listening to each other. Because I think that as much as we're building that conversation skills, a lot of times we internalize that as the speaking part of it, and really the listening is just as important for them to take that in. And so knowing, is this what I want to get out of it? You know, that it's not just students sitting in a circle saying their things or saying their thoughts, but they also have to be listening to each other. And then my other thing, yes, it's important to start small, but I would say it's open to everybody. The littles can do it too. It looks different. And so not being afraid to think outside the box on what that looks like in a classroom, that it's not just a strategy for upper grade students. It's not just a strategy for gifted kids. It is something for everybody. And it makes everybody a little better.
So how do you measure student growth or success?
I definitely believe it's the goal setting, right? Your goals are a little more elevated in the nuances of conversation, of language, vocabulary, and ideas. It may not show up necessarily on a test, but I was thinking about how our last benchmark, the kids who persevered through the very lengthy question and responses, are kids that can listen, can pick out the parts of that question and the response to truly dissect that question's asking for this one specific area. This response answers that one specific, it explains that question. So I think it's that perseverance that the stamina that is evident.
And in student writing, because part of the seminar process is the post-seminar write, which, you know, can look a lot of different ways. But the goal of that part of the seminar process is where they take their internal thoughts, their action of like, how do I take these big ideas that we've talked about? I've heard other people say smart things about. I've measured it with my own thoughts. Now, what do I do with that? And the writing is where it kind of solidifies that. And you can see the evidence of that in their writing, like how much they're able to think about, now what do I do with this? That could look like a very traditional essay, but it also could be an analysis of a quote, an action item for themselves to take out to the community, or, you know, a kindness challenge, depending on what the big idea is. It can be a lot of different things, but you can really see evidence of it in their writing.
How has your school changed in student growth after implementing and growing this type of methodology? Did you just come into a great, fantastic school and then you just added the methodology?
I definitely did inherit an amazing school, but we know that amazing doesn't stay amazing without work, right? It does require diligence, skill, cultivating a school environment that, I think Kelly says, that is okay with being messy, with not knowing, and not fearful. So when you have Padea in place as the core value of your school, crucial conversations are never easy, but they are accepted. Feedback is receptive and can be taken as in, oh, let me try that. And not necessarily coming from me, yet from peers and from the kids. When Kelly was talking about everybody's at eye level and everybody's valued at the same level, I definitely feel that in our space. Kids can write recommendations. Teachers from first grade can say, hey, second grade, what do you guys do here? So there's a lot of vertical conversation that happens because we have this common thread.
I have a different perspective. So I got to help implement Padaya at Beverly Woods, K5. I won't say that's the single factor, but I think it is a factor that contributed to us also earning our National Blue Ribbon. So I think it closed gaps. Like, it brought kids together. It made an impact and strengthened the culture of an already really strong school. And I think then we just started talking about and thinking about ideas together, and that just fueled that. I got to implement Padaya at Elon Park with Jane. So I had an amazing partner, you know, doing that work. It wasn't how the school opened, so it's not in our walls, but I think it's become how we do and how we think about what we do. And I think it's also helped families, because we have gone from an A school to a B school and back to an A school. I think it's also helped families understand that while that state reporting is important, regardless of the A or the B, that kids are getting a really great experience and that we're still working to maintain that level of greatness. But that even whenever it doesn't go as planned, like, we're still working on these skills that are going to make for strong citizens in our community.
I love that definition of success.
Well, Kelly, you know, at the beginning, when we started Padaya, there was definitely, I want to say, small circle of people that, yay, I'm gung-ho. And then there were definitely pockets of like, when is this going to go away? That took some time. What do you think was the thing that kind of closed the loop for you guys? Because I feel like I left, but it was such a great experience to see what the start of Elon Park, taking that philosophy in, because I knew this one lived through it.
I think it's the early adopters, those champions for it, create enough energy that it isn't top down, but it is in that Padaya leadership team, that there's actually teachers at the table, one from every grade level, that are invested in and helping make school-wide decisions. So it's not, oh, this is what Kelly thinks, or, oh, Kelly is making us do that. Like, nope, your colleague, the teachers next door to you, helped plan this seminar, you know, and is making these decisions. So I think it's, which is similar to that seminar circle. Like, we're all in that circle together. And my idea isn't more impactful or powerful than Jane's idea, you know, but we're making these decisions together and really working on it, which is a great, I don't know, it's a great challenge for me as a leader too, to really be a listener in that circle and hear, well, I really wanted us to talk about this big idea, but they think we need to talk about this as a school. So, okay, they're a little more closer to kids than I am. So they might know better than me what it is we need to be talking about or thinking about. And so that's always a good, you know, a good learning stance too.
I don't know that when we are defining success in such a pigeonhole of academics and how that shows up on test scores, necessarily how we as humans measure success. You may not do well on your test scores, but you are going to be a successful person. And I think Padaya equalizes that for everyone, that no matter what plans or skills that you have, you can contribute in some way.
Love that. So, Kim, you're going to have to come down to Charlotte and visit these two schools so you can see it in action, because it is incredible and it is beautiful to see kids from kindergarten all the way through fifth grade engaging in such meaningful, incredible dialogue.
We hope today's episode has inspired you. Will you take a moment to share it with a friend?
NCAGT provides you with resources like this podcast. Please find us on social media or visit our website at ncagt.org to learn more.
Please note, the thoughts and ideas shared in this podcast are as diverse as our guests, not always reflecting the official NCAGT stance. Until next time, stay curious and keep learning. Because we can't just hope, they'll be fine.